accession number 10600, reel 14.
Mr. John Wainwright, reel 14. This course you were sent out on to, that you, did you actually go in November, or was it October when you were sent?
It was only a week or two before the armistice. I suppose it'd be the end of October. Probably a fortnight or 3 weeks course there. A general course of tank training. I think it was called a tank trainer's course there.
So you were going to become an instructor?
Presumably going to be an instructor in the battalion, and so that when we got new people coming in, one of my jobs would be to take them through a course of tank training at the depot, at the battalion headquarters.
So this was just more of the same, really? Was there anything new?
No, it was more or less the same that we've been doing in England at Wareham and Bovington, and this tank training. It was an instructor's course to become more proficient in the tank movement and tank action and so forth.
Did you have any... what were the tank tactics that you were being trained in that other battalions were employing?
Well, perhaps the tactics was wrong. I mean, it was just the normal training was. I mean, was driving the tanks and driving them over trenches and all that, and up different sorts of ground. That's all.
So there wasn't much actual tactical.
No, I mean, there was no question of being a dozen or 20 tanks going into some, because you were in individuals and just that. Individual tank training course.
How were you taught to go to work with infantry?
I beg your pardon?
How were you taught to work with infantry, to cooperate with infantry?
Well, I mean, like when we were with the machine gun corps, we were attached to an infantry division, so we come under the orders of the whoever is in charge of the infantry brigade, you see, and get the orders from them.
But what I meant was, how would you, in the field, in action, how did you cooperate with them? Because they can't speak to you in a tank or tell you what to do. So were there any routines or drills worked out?
Well, we never had any large training courses like that with 20 or 30 tanks in course. I suppose it worked out that the beginning was you started in the individual tanks and got used to having half a dozen and so forth.
When you were actually in action, though, how would you communicate with the infantry? I mean, when you went on these sorties, how would you know what to do? Was there any method of communicating with them? The actual soldiers who were going over the top with you?
Well, they normally followed the track there, and I don't know that we had any particular method of... We were stuck in the tank there, and you have a job to make any signals with them, as far as I know.
So you were just independent and took the decisions on what you could see.
You had the orders what you were doing, and they knew what they were doing, and they followed the tank and went on. The tank broke through there, they followed on and went on to capture the trenches and so on, round up the prisoners in the trenches.
What do you remember about the armistice then on November the 11th?
Well, all I remember about the armistice was that I was at Traypore, and remember a few of us just went and had a celebration dinner that night. That's all. We just went and had dinner, and that was it. There was nothing in the village that I remember. It was a little seaside. Traypore was right on the sea coast, and as I remember, there were no particular celebration amongst the inhabitants of the place, as I remember it. Everybody was very relieved, and that was it, and we just come to the end of the war.
That's how you felt?
And we just accepted it like everything else. It might have been different if we'd been in a big town or even out the front, but we were right behind there, and so there were no celebrations at all, as I remember it there at all. On this tank course, there were, as I remember, there were three or four of us from this 8th Tank Battalion. So I said we just went out to the local estaminet, restaurant, whatever it was, and we just had an evening meal, and that was it. So we had no more celebration than that.
How long was it? Did you rejoin the 8th Battalion after the course?
Well, the course more or less was dismissed, I think. I don't remember even finishing the course. We just went back to the battalion in the club when things got settled down in a day or two, and we went back to the battalion, and there we were until about Christmas time there, and well, I don't seem to be passing on the time and waiting to see what would happen, where we were going, how long we should be in France, whether what the demobilisation procedure was, and so on.
Were you enjoying being an officer? Was it a better life than it had been as an other rank?
Well, just took it as it came. I mean, that's how soldiers do. You take things as they come. You never thought much about the ethics of the thing or the particular rank at all. You were just an officer and you did your job. Or if you were a non-commissioned officer, it was the same, or a private.
Whereabouts yeah. were you until Christmas? What area of France were you
well,
in?
Well, we never moved. We were in the same area that we joined there. The battalion headquarters never moved from that point, from us joined. The four of us had joined there. And until Christmas. And then it was shortly after Christmas, then there must have been some orders given, and some of us were given orders to join another tank battalion, which was bound for duty on the Rhine. I suppose it
was that the 13th.
That was the 13th tank battalion. Yes. So we just eventually. I think there were four of us again. I seem to remember it was the same four officers who joined from the cadet school that we actually joined the 13th tank battalion. We weren't due for instant dismissal from the army or demobilisation, and I remember going up by train to...
They were already there then?
Pardon?
They were already there.
There must have been somebody there, yes. I remember going up by train and joining the 13th tank battalion. We're somewhere behind Durand, that's on the way to Cologne. I remember going up on the train through Mons and right up there to the border between Belgium and France, about Verviers, then on Aix-la-Chapelle. And it was from there that we went on to the battalion, who were somewhere on the heights of a place called Kaltenherberg. So the Kaltenherberg, obviously the German name for a cold town up on the hill somewhere. We're very high. We're behind the Rhine for a time, and we were there just with the tanks there, just standing on guard, sort of thing.
What sort of? It was just normal army life then.
It was just normal army life. I mean, we had headquarters there, but it was mostly in civilian houses, residences, and so forth.
What were your billets like?
We had the, I think I was billeted there. I remember being billeted with I remember this German lady there. It was just a sort of a fairly large sized cottage it was. And I was just billeted with this old lady, and we had our meals in the mess, which was in a larger house in the village or township where we were.
So she just provided a bed?
She just provided the accommodation, yes.
How did you get on with her?
We got on all right with them. We had no difficulty with the people. I remember there was a mayor of this local place, and I remember going from the battalion to request something from the mayor. I remember going there and getting on all right with oh, he'd be the burgomaster, I suppose. The mayor is the French, of course. Be the burgomaster. We seemed to get on all right, and we got on all right with the people.
There was no resentment that you'd be in there or about the war?
From my experience, they seemed to be very glad that the war was over, and that we'd won the war, and they were just got to put up with it.
Was there any evidence of any of the sort of suffering that had been caused by the blockade at that time?
I remember that this old lady that I just remember she and her husband. I don't remember seeing any children there. If she'd had any son, they'd probably been in the war anyway. But I remember there was a shortage of soap and food and so forth. I remember giving this old lady some a packet of soap, you know, that I had some parcel from home and got this soap that I really, I got enough of it and I gave her some of this soap and she was absolutely delighted. I mean, it was marvellous. This soap seemed to be something that they hadn't had. So there was, seemed to be, must have been on very, very short commons. Even there, they lived in this out-of-the-way place, but... But there was no, there didn't, from what I saw of the people there, there was no great resentment that they had put up with us, with no trouble at all. And we were there for quite a while, this Kalter Herbert there, and just, we just got our tanks there and we're just sitting pretty with nothing to do, really.
No exercising?
No, not particularly. Well, there were tanks, you kept the tanks in order and so forth, because it was there that... One of the tanks going down the main street, as it was of this village there, something had happened, and one of the battalion had got in front of him and was flattened by the tank. It was this accident that happened. He was killed. I remember that very well indeed, because I was given the job of taking the body to be buried not in off German territory. For some reason or other, when this man died, instead of being buried in some local cemetery, the powers that be had decided that he mustn't be. And so I was given the job. Went out with us. It was an ambulance, I think, that I got, and took a small firing party. And we went to Spa in Belgium. That was Spa, and all that I know about Spa was that was the headquarters of the Kaiser during the First World War. And I remember we went to this cemetery outside the town. All I remember is it was just a walled cemetery there, and we went in. And as we went in with a coffin with this man and the bearers, and the heavens opened, I think it started raining, and we had thunder and lightning. And while the ceremony was going on, there must have been some resident clergyman there who took the service, and we had this firing party. And I remember they fired the normal three shots after the interment, and they just like sounded like little cracks of the small fireworks against the thunder that was going on online. I always remember that.
He was a British soldier, was
he? One of our own battalion, yeah. There was this accident with a tank somewhere, and he got in the way, and I don't know, it's just some accident, and he was killed.
When the tanks were like that, was moving up the street, would they damage the street at all?
Oh no, because I mean, they were on tracks, you know, on these tracks which were very, very wide, and actually, I mean, it would level out the humps and the hollows, you know, it wouldn't do any tremendous damage to the road.
Were there any other accidents?
No, nothing of that sort. No, we just had a reasonable time there. Remember, we used to play cricket, and we had made a pitch on some of the local farmland there, and we just passed the time on there for quite a few months before moving down nearer to Cologne, and we were billeted in Durin, and there again we were just in at the Army of Occupation there. The tanks were there and we were there, and there was no great demonstrations. There was no fraternising with the Germans, because I remember whilst we were at Durin, that's what, 10 or 15 miles from Cologne, I should think, maybe less, someone had arranged a football match. The local people had asked if we could have a team from our battalion to play the locals, so this football match. And then, you know, every arrangement was made for this. We thought it was probably the right thing to do. The war was over now. Let's have a kick about with these lads and so on. But the orders came down the line, on no account must this match proceed. And that was the end of any fraternisation.
Were you allowed out into the town on an evening or into the villages for it?
Well, whilst I was there at Durin, I was appointed demobilisation officer of the battalion. because demog was taking place gradually, you know, the people according to their occupations and ages and all the rest of it. They had some scheme, and as orders were coming back from the division to our battalion, it was about a number to be released. This was done by the battalion orderly room at first, the adjutant and assistant adjutant and the orderly clerks and so on. And then it got to a bigger job, and I was given the job of the demob officer, as demob officer. So I spent the rest of my time on the Rhine, I mean, arranging about the demobilisation of
how
the various
How did you go
Rhine.
About it? I mean,
well, you got the numbers who had to be, the groups, you know, everybody was inserting groups, you know, numbers of the groups. And you get an order from there that certain groups would be released. And then you would arrange the train time. We all went by train from Durham or Cologne right down to Boulogne, I think it was, to the port of embarkation. So and you had to give documents, various documents for that they had to present in at the embarkation port, and then where they had to report in England and so forth. It was all the routine of it. So I was in charge of that. It was just administrative.
Would you get out into the town? Into
I don't know. No, I never went out very much there. I was billeted above a butcher shop, as a matter of fact, there with some German people there, and I just slept there, and we had a mess in one of the larger houses nearby, and the mess was there. So I think in my what spare time I had to spend it more as staying in the mess and reading and that sort of thing.
What did the mess offer?
Well, we had a reasonable meal. We had reasonable meals there, quite decent meals, because we got our own rations, and the officers paid a certain amount from their pay, I mean, to supplement the ration. And we had the battalion cooks and so forth, officers' mess. So we just like an ordinary officers' mess there, and we had a reasonable meal there. So we had the supplemented normal rations.
What about entertainment in the mess? What could you do?
There was no entertainment there. You could have a drink if you wanted one there. You could just read and so forth. There was nothing specially laid on.
They wouldn't organise dance.
The only thing there was that in the town, I remember, even at that after the war there, the Germans were very, very keen on music and opera and so forth. And I remember going to at the opera house in... it must have been either Durham or Cologne, I'm not quite sure now. And it was an opera, Martha, Grand Opera. I remember going.
Did you get local leave at all?
What,
Durham
or... No, I mean, we could just go into Cologne any time we liked, in free time there. So, I mean, we just used to go and do a bit of sightseeing, and I did anyway. And in the cathedral and wandered about there. And I've already told you about going to the opera there somewhere. Well, we just had a little wander about the countryside round about. But I never went on any special leave down the Rhine to, as I said, to Wiesbaden, which was one of the watering places on the line, spas or something. I never went on any special leave at all.
Was that because of your responsibilities as, or did you, as...
Yes, well, I mean, these chaps went, of course, during the daytime and so forth, and when they probably got a weekend leave, and I was tired all the time, so they didn't get the opportunities. So I just spent most of my time doing my job.
So this carried on until round about... You were promoted to full lieutenant in November.
Oh, yes, I was on the... There would be I think it was more or less automatic after 18 months, I mean, providing your service was satisfactory. And on the recommendation of your commanding officer, I think it was more or less automatic. But anyway, that's by the way. But I'd be on the 1st of November 1919. So I'd be the for a lieutenant then.
Did you ever consider making the army your career, becoming a regular, so to speak?
No, I never thought of that. No, never.
Why not? Did it not appeal to you as a...
Well, I suppose I'd had over 5 years in the army, and I thought it was quite enough. I'd done what I joined the territorials for. I'd have been to war and done my whack, and I don't think I was interested in joining the regular army.
How did your own demobilisation come Pardon? Through? Your own demobilisation. How did you hear about that, and how was it?
Well, they just came through in the normal way that I was getting the particulars of people, the various groups to demobilise. Then it came to my turn at the end, and so I was in one of the batches at the beginning of November for demobilisation. So I had to prepare my own documents, get the signature of the commanding officer, and sort of went on and went down the line to Boulogne by train.
Just a couple of questions. Had there been any trouble, or had there been any unrest in the battalion about troops wanting to get home early?
No trouble at all, no unrest at all. I mean, of course, people knew what groups they were in, and it worked very, very smoothly. And
was the 13th Battalion being run down entirely, or were you getting drafts of new?
I don't remember any drafts coming down, so we were gradually being run down. So I suppose coming toward the end, there would hardly be any battalion left. I don't remember any drafts. If there were any replacements, there would be replacements of a full battalion.
So you went via Boulogne?
Went down the line on the railway to Boulogne, and then across the channel, and then went up to somewhere on the Shropshire border, I think, which was the command depot for the Western Division. And there I got my demobilisation papers, given a month's leave, and went home, and that was it.
Were you given any? Was your pay settled up, or were you given any bonus or anything like that?
Well, everybody was due to a gratuity, depending on your length of service and rank and so forth. I don't remember that I was given it at that time, but because my full demobilisation papers came through from the War Office, and a letter of thanks from the War Council or something. I remember the normal a letter that you get thanking you for your services and so forth. So we got particulars of of your gratuity, and given some advice about how to invest it if you fancied that. I remember I bought some funding loan with quite a bit of it, and I used that as a nest egg. Well, it came in useful when I got married eventually.
What were you going to do? I mean, you'd been in the mining industry and you'd been working hard for your qualifications. What did you plan to do when you came out of the army?
Well, it would be about Christmas time when I finally got out of the army. So maybe I don't remember being at home for Christmas, which is quite a change anyway. And I stayed at home. I got a month's leave with pay, so I wasn't too sure what I wanted to do. I wasn't too keen on going back to the mining industry, because I seemed to have missed so much time at a very important period of my life, from 19, getting on for 20, up to nearly 25. And I was rather worried about what I should do. So I just sort of bided my time a bit. I did go down to see an old friend of mine who had mentioned during the time I met him in the ward that I might like to join him in a business venture there, an established business venture. I went down to see him in January and had a look round and went with him to London and various places in connection with the business, and decided that it wasn't my forte at all. And so I said, thank you very much, but I think I'd better get back to Lancashire, where I belong. So then it was then that I decided that I'd go back to mining and see how things went on. Because there I'd gone back without any statutory qualifications whatsoever. So all I could do was just take a job, any job that I'd get down the mine.
Did you mind that? You'd been an officer, a full lieutenant. Did you mind going in as
well? I didn't mind, no. I was just there, I took it on, and everybody down the mine had just accepted it. Because I remember at the same place, there was a friend of mine, well, it became a great friend of mine, who was also in the same position that he'd spent so many years in the army, and he decided that he was going to take a course. And he was working at this Bamfalunga Main Scholarly with that. And so I went to the same firm because I knew the manager there, and he offered me a job. And this particular man later on became, I think, the area general manager, one of the big districts in the Northwest in the Coal Board, Jimmy French.
How were you going about getting your qualifications again?
Well, I heard about, after I'd gone down the mine, I'd heard that there were possibilities. Someone had told me that at the mining college were running courses for ex-officers and ex-servicemen with mining experience who wanted to make up for lost time in a way and qualify for higher posts in mining. So I made an application and was accepted for a 3-year course. The application had to be made, I think, to some war department in London, and you had to get all full particulars and recommendations from the college and so forth. They made quite sure that you were the right sort of person to have a course, go in for this course. They didn't accept anyone. So I got a grant for 3 years to take this mining engineering course, a full diploma course in mining, which is a pretty high qualification for mining engineers anyway. One of the well accepted criteria for mining engineers was the Wigan Mining College at that time was well established and well known. As a matter of fact, it was the It is the second oldest mining college in the country, second to the Royal School of Mines.
This is the same as the Wigan Technical and Mining College.
Wigan Mining and Technical.
Sorry, yes.
It's Wigan Mining because it started Wigan Mining and Mechanical. That's one of the oldest workmen's colleges that started early in the last 19th century, actually.
And this course allowed you to It was a shortcut to the qualification. You'd have had to work a lot longer in the mine, I presume.
Oh no, there's nothing about it being a shortcut to anything, because before to be able to sit for a mine manager certificate, you had to have 5 years underground experience in the first place, 2 years of which had been at the coal face, which I'd already got. I mean, I got a certificate to that effect from the general manager of Whistler Main Scholarly. So I got the necessary underground experience to take the course. So
did you sketch in what happened to you after that, so we follow it through?
Well, I mean, it was a normal 3 years. It was like a sandwich course, actually. We did 8 months at the college and then the 4 months in the recess. That most of us went back to some colliery and furthered our underground experience and so forth. And that went on for 3 years. So it was a normal college life. We had our college students association, which I used to attend. We had a rugby team, a rugby union team. We formed Wigan Mining College. And I played for that for quite a while whilst I was there. Played in many of the Lancashire team like Waterloo and Fylde and Preston Grasshoppers, I remember, some of the Manchester team, went up and down Lancashire. I'll give you, as a bit of interest, I remember playing Waterloo, and this would happen during the 1921 strike. That was whilst I was at the college. And we were due to meet Waterloo, and several of our people were helping at various colleges in the district, I mean, for pumping and so forth, safety work. And we were short-handed for this particular match. We were going by coach, and we had to pick up. We started off with about 11 men. We wanted 15. and we picked up one or two men on the way, and we got to Waterloo, and we still only got 14 men, and so we persuaded the bus driver, the coach driver, to turn out for us. I don't think he'd ever played football, or certainly not rugby in his life. I always remember he turned out with his long johns on, to the great merriment of the spectators. These long johns swung around his knees, you know, and just dashing about the field, looking, trying to do something and doing nothing. But anyway, that was just a diversion.